On the Morning Show, WHYN News Talk 560 708. Brad Shepard here with Bo Sullivan. We're all trying to read the tea leaves now with the argument, the final day of argument being proffered the Supreme Court for those on behalf of the, well, what we're calling, it has so many different names, the health care mandate, the health care law.
It's Obamacare.
Obamacare, that's the nickname that legislation has received. And yesterday, all the talking heads were tripping all over themselves trying to analyze the position of Justice Kennedy, who in the first part, there seemed to be a challenging, if not a mocking, undertone in his questioning of the Solicitor General.
Right.
And then later in the proceedings, he seemed far more enigmatic as to whether or not what his true feelings were. This is everybody trying to figure out. They perceive on a 5-4 Justice Kennedy to be the swing vote.
That's the thing, and I think, and we'll ask the professor here in a second, but I just read one where they kind of looked at Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice, and said he threw that whole, you know, they're using broccoli.
Yeah.
Everybody's got, well, somebody did the bread. He goes, that's not an argument. Continue.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa, okay.
Broccoli and cell phones.
Yeah,
the argument there was when it was stated that sooner or later you're going to have to face health care expenses, so everybody's going to have to face it. Well, sooner or later you're going to have to face funeral expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Should the government mandate that everybody buy burial insurance? So the argument goes back and forth. And joining us right now is Professor Leora Harpaz from which institution?
Western New England School of Law.
Western New England School of Law. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Glad to talk to you.
You're a constitutional law professor.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you it straight out, is this health care mandate, Obamacare, whatever we want to call it, is it unconstitutional in your opinion?
Well, in my opinion, it's constitutional, but I have to say that after listening to the argument yesterday, I'm not so sure that the court is going to agree with that position.
Hmm. Now, why do you think that?
Well, I thought that the questions were a lot more hostile to the idea that this could be constitutional than I was expecting, and I thought that the defense or the responses to the question was a lot weaker than I expected it to be.
So you don't think the Solicitor General for the White House was very good?
I don't. I have to say.
Pardon me for interrupting, but I had heard yesterday some of the overview of those proceedings that he didn't seem as prepared as they thought he should have been. They thought he hemmed and hawed here and there. Was that your take on his performance?
Well, I thought that any time you argue before the U.S. Supreme Court, a central question for the court, no matter what the case is going to be, is what is the consequence of ruling in your favor for future cases?
Mm-hmm.
What is this going to mean? And in this argument, like in every other argument, the court asked that question over and over again. They asked, you know, where's the line? If Congress can do this, does it mean they can do everything? What can't they do? And he never really had a good answer to that question. And if you can't answer that question, I think that, you know, you have damaged your case.
So, in other words, it sounds to me as though that he should have been prepared for an argument on two planes, the specific issue itself and the precedent that it leaves in its wake, which it sounds as though that's where some of the focus on the justices were in their questioning.
I think that's right. And the other thing I think that was important that I didn't hear in the argument was to show the court that this case follows inevitably from the cases that the court has already decided in this area.
Mm.
That it's going to be hard, if not impossible, to distinguish this case from previous cases. And there was almost no discussion in the government's argument about how this relates to past cases that the court has decided, and I think that was another problem with the argument.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this question, and that is there a provision in the Constitution, or is the Constitution, as we understand it, inherently against a federal instruction or mandate for any American citizen to enter into a contract and buy a service or product?
Well, it depends on, you know, asked in that specific way. Obviously, there's nothing that says that specifically, but here they're relying on the Commerce Clause, and the Commerce Clause is a very general power that includes the power to engage in all forms of regulation as long as there's a substantial effect on interstate commerce. And mandates are an important form of regulation. I mean, if you think about the law, they're constantly telling us what we can do and what we can't do and what we must do. If you buy a car, you must have, you must have car insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there are a lot of musts in the law. There are a lot of can'ts in the law, and it's simply one form of regulation. I mean,
that's an interesting analogy. Yeah. Because you say if you buy a car, of course, you don't have to buy. It's not compulsory to buy automobile insurance if you don't own a car.
Right. I mean, that there's no question that's a distinction. Nevertheless, the form of the regulation for people who are affected by it is a mandate. Another example is, and you can give a kind of the same response you just gave to this example, but there's an important Supreme Court case that upheld the constitutionality of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which required places of public accommodations, hotels, motels, restaurants, to serve people without regard to their race. And in that case, there was a small restaurant that was came within the provisions of this statute, and the restaurant owner argued that the Commerce Clause can't force me to serve customers that I'm not interested in serving. I don't serve African Americans in my restaurant. And the Supreme Court upheld that. That was a mandate. It forced him to enter into a business relationship with people that he did not want to serve in his restaurant, and the court upheld it under the commerce power. Mm-hmm. Now you can say, well, he ran a restaurant, so he'd already entered commerce. But, of course, in his restaurant, he wasn't serving this particular clientele. So in that sense, he hadn't entered into that particular form of commerce, and yet he was forced to do so. And I think that that's, not a perfect analogy, but a decent analogy in terms of requiring someone to do something that that they don't want to do.
I do have to say, Professor, it's so interesting to me to hear these analogous points because so many of them seem to be of a reach to, particularly under this large and general umbrella of commerce, to bend these things around to conform to the argument about the healthcare mandate.
Well, I mean, anything that the government tries that's a little new, is never going to look exactly like things that have happened before. But there are been lots of expansions of the concept of commerce over time. So, for instance, Congress can regulate interstate commerce, but it turns out under that power they can actually regulate the manufacturer of goods that are intended for interstate commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Long before they become interstate commerce, Congress is entitled to regulate them. It can regulate employment relationships in a business that produces products for interstate commerce. It can require that place of business pay its employees under the provisions of federal law, the Equal Pay Act, et cetera, the Fair Labor Standards Act. It can require that the workplace be kept safe, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you could say, well, what has that got to do with commerce? That's happens locally long before commerce comes into play, but yet the federal government is allowed to regulate all of those employment relationships.
Can you give us a prediction on how this is going to go? Do you see 5-4?
Is it 5-4?
I think, it's very hard to say. I mean, it could easily be 6-3 as opposed to 5-4. It could be 5-4. I don't even know which way. I mean, before this, I would have said it's a slam dunk. Now I'm not really sure which way it comes out. I mean, I think the court has the problem that it presented to the advocates. It has the problem, it said to the government, well, what's the limiting principle? Where does this stop? But the court, too, has that problem. If it takes away power from Congress, how much power is it going to take away, and what's it going to mean? Can it kind of limit the decision to the facts of this case or something a lot like it, or are they going to really weaken Congress so that they can't take care of necessary economic problems? I mean, health care is a central piece of the American economy, and if Congress suddenly, loses its authority to try and get a handle of that, what else, can't they try and deal with?
It cuts either way. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's an
interesting
point.
Can you clarify for me? Because we're totally out of time here.
Okay.
But at the outset of our conversation, you said your prediction was they're not going to have it. the justices. Now you're saying, it sounds as though you're saying you're really unsure.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said that I thought that it now looked a lot less likely than they would uphold it. Mm. I'm unsure, but I guess if I had to, bet one way or the other, I'm still going to say that in the end they're going to uphold it.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
I'm not sure where you are.
I know.
Is that deliberate? Because I can't get a fix on you.
Are you running for office, Professor?
I can't get a fix on you at all. But I'm very grateful for you being with us this morning.
Stuff.
Thank you very much,
okay.
Professor Harpaz.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Be well.
Bye.